Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is really going to be a show that I think is going to make you realize that there's so much more to you as a person. Many of us have cultural paradigms, expectations, we have our goal lists, we have those images in our head of what we feel, we think should be what we're supposed to do. And getting through all of this stuff takes life experience more often than not. You're not necessarily going to get it out of a book. However, if one is wise, you will take time to always expand your world, expand your learning capacity, and take time to read material that makes you more aware of yourself. And my guest today, Brian Gast, has put together a book titled The Business of Wanting More. Now, there is a subtitle to this, Why Some Executives Move from Success to Fulfillment and Others Don't. But I can tell you, having read this book, that there's more substance inside of it, and just about anyone can benefit, not just an executive. I would like to welcome Brian Gast to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, Donna. Nice to be here.
Brian, you're a man of accomplishment. You have been an advisor to Fortune 500 companies. You've worked with entrepreneurs. You have known a level of success that if it were itemized out, a lot of people would just go, wow, I wish I could be like Brian. However, you didn't write this book because you wanted to wave a banner of professional ta-tas. You wanted to write this book because you had a series of very profound, insightful experiences yourself. Would you share some of those with my audience?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you, if there's if I'm an authority on anything, you know, it's how to, you know, how to make some stupid moves. And my goal in writing the book, Donna, was, you know, in some ways to invite other people to look at the learnings that they could get out of their failures. I've got this belief that after age 30, we stop learning from our successes. And certainly that was true for me. I think you learn a lot in your younger years from your wins and your successes. But as you get older, the big teachers are the things that didn't work out as well as you wanted to. And the big aha that I had was there was a moment when, in the peak of the dot-com era, my company was about ready to go public, and the valuation on the company and the implied valuation on my holdings of the company was a staggering number. And I thought, Donna, for sure, having taken a company public before and you know, been worth millions before, that although that didn't make me happy, I thought this was going to be the time. This was going to be the big breakthrough moment. And the big aha that I got was as soon as I heard those numbers, I immediately had two observations that came clear to me at that moment. One was, this isn't it. You know, that my ship had come in, this was everything that I thought, it was the sum total of all my efforts to date, and I realized that wasn't going to make me happy. That wasn't the thing, but I had thought it was. And the second thing that happened was, it was a matter of days that I was on the phone with my financial advisors trying to figure out a way to get $50 million to turn into $200 million. so the addiction just kind of continued. So that was a huge breakthrough for me, and it really taught me that there was a number of points in my life leading up to that where I thought, yeah, you know, I'm really kind of got the brass ring here. I've kind of got a lot of accolades and made my goals, but things just aren't kind of quite, some reason, not quite complete, and I'm not really happy. And so this one was the kind of pinnacle moment that I finally started to get it, that it actually wasn't going to come through these kind of external markers of success, that was not going to be the gateway to happiness.
I want to share with you an experience I had years ago. There was a young couple that had been going together, and the young man at the time, he was one of these real go-getters, a real rah, 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 and had this tremendous drive and this tremendous determination. Well, the lady he was dating, I'll never forget, because my husband and I went out to lunch with him, and she turned to me after we had had a delightful interaction over the lunch meal. And when we were in the ladies' room, she said, "He just doesn't get it. He wants everyone to follow his patterning. He doesn't understand. Not everybody wants what he wants." And what I also heard was that his drive, his determination, which was very, very focused, which is not unusual, very, very focused on being a multi-multi-millionaire and being very successful. But she said, not everybody wants that. And there was a disconnect. He could not relate to how she thought or how she felt or even how other people felt. And as you were speaking, I thought, I wonder how much of the cultural norm is a driving force into this is where you're supposed to be. It can come from family. It can come from society. It can come from many different components. You and your middle 30s, though, became aware a lot earlier than many people do that your life had to have more meaning than just existing in this bubble. And I was intrigued with how you, in the book, say you became unknowingly trapped inside of this bubble, and it was beliefs that came from all kinds of genres, and you said to yourself, I just didn't know I was in this bubble. How did you find the pin that was going to bust open the bubble?
That's great. You know, first, I think what I'm aware of first is that I'm in the bubble. I mean, I think that's the first thing. And if I was married to the gal that you talked to, I would, of course, been telling her that she doesn't get it,
mm-hmm.
right? And I would be surrounding myself with people that I felt did get it, and they'd all be chasing the same thing, and well, we'd all just kind of validate these beliefs that we had, and we kind of validate the assumptions that we have, and those assumptions and beliefs about what means, what's important, and what defines success, and that really is the nature of this bubble. It provides this lens through which we see the world, and clearly he was kind of stuck in his lens. And it was in my mid-30s, Donna, that I actually started getting little glimmers of the fact that things weren't working, but I really didn't see it and couldn't really reach for the pin at the time because I didn't really know. I really, you know, concluded at the time it was everybody else's issue.
Mm-hmm.
I got trapped into, I was running this publicly traded company and ended up kind of in some ways isolating myself, not really selling myself well to the board, and just kind of hubris and you name it at a, you know, what was that, 34, 35 years old, and ended up getting fired from that job. And that was a tiny wake-up. But, you know, what happened was I got hired, and I got in, you know, by another group of investors, and you know, we went off and, you know, just made more money, and so I really didn't learn from that. So it felt like the popping of the bubble for me had to come after I took an honest inventory of the things that weren't working. I had to get honest with myself to even see that. You know, and part of this is the seeing part of it comes from other people, is finally being able to get around a person or two that I can listen to that says, hey, you know, you seem kind of restless. You know, it seems like you're continuing to kind of, you know, build these towers, and I'm just kind of curious if you're satisfied. I mean, I just started getting, I can't really explain sometimes how that happens for people, but they start noticing it. Either a relationship that's important to them begins to fail, their health. So life happens. It communicates to us that something's not quite working. And then ultimately the busting of the bubble itself, I find, kind of comes through really examining all those beliefs that we have. I mean, is this, you know, for me, it was like, well, is money going to equal happiness? I mean, it took me a while, but I finally kind of looked at it, and I said, no, and everybody knows that, Don. I mean, everybody knows it, but for some reason, we get tripped up on it, and we continue to believe it at an unconscious level. Part of it is just slowing down enough to look at what it is that's fueling us. And that bubble, when it becomes apparent to us, that's 98% of the battles. Like, wow, that's this limiting belief that I've got, that this is what it means to be happy, and that's not working. And so just noticing it, we can start reaching for that pin and having it burst. And by the way, it doesn't get burst forever. I mean, it continues to kind of sneak back in, and another bubble or another belief that we have to have this to, you know, be a great parent, and et cetera, et cetera. So always having to be aware of what those underlying beliefs are that are creating, you know, oftentimes kind of unhappy, stressful outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And so many times those belief bubbles create the illusion that something is going to make a difference. I can remember that there was an illusion that I had a few years ago. And I said, all right, I can, if I do this, this, and this, then that's, someone promises me that they're going to be able to just take care of what I don't want to take care of. And I, thousands of dollars later, I found out I had really played the role of a fool. Mm. Now, I say that about me. But what I learned was that at the basis, when I really examined it, fear had been the propeller that had given me that I've got to do this, totally blinding me. And not that the intellect wasn't working, but I didn't trust myself instead of something or someone else. And I think that is really a learning curve. I don't know of anyone, Brian, that doesn't have to go through that. And like you said about yourself, there comes that moment where you need to have integrity with yourself and have some honesty with yourself and really recognize that if you want what is really good success in life, now for some it might be multi-millions of dollars that allows them to be philanthropic or whatever, but there's so much more that goes into a quality of life. You use the word fulfillment, and you have a specific chapter about how to move from success to fulfillment. Now, some of my listeners are going to be saying, gee, I don't even feel like I'm successful. Define your definition of success and also your definition of fulfillment.
Yeah, that's, you know, and it's interesting if you for argument's sake, I just turn to the kind of typical definition of success, that I've achieved the goals that I wanted to achieve. That I have in the world of business, it's typically I've achieved some level of financial or career progress, scope of responsibility, size, impact, things that are measurable quantitatively, that kind of. And you're right, everybody can, we can play with the definitions of that and define success differently. Fulfillment on, but what I'm going to say about success is it's usually measured by kind of externally observable data or behavior, something we can see. And fulfillment, on the other hand, is something that's from the inside. You know, I always have this other line that says, you know, if you can't be fulfilled today, you can't be fulfilled next week. In other words, it's not, fulfillment doesn't come, you know, with accumulating something or progressing towards something. It's an inside job. So that's the main distinction between those two. And by the way, success and making money and, you know, trying to get more responsibility and getting promoted, oh, there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's the attachment to it and the hope that it would bring something deeper that can be the way we get off track. And so the thing I've noticed is that success doesn't lead to fulfillment, but fulfillment will lead to success. You if you're around somebody who's fulfilled, they're grounded, they're inspired, they're not operating out of some compensating, you know, gotta heal something kind of energy. They already have that. Their cup is already full, and that's the people that we like to be around. And because those people are inspiring and they're easy to connect to, and they feel like you feel like you're seen and cared for by those people, they oftentimes have richer lives. Their life is more successful. So I just invite people to start with that and say, what is it that I'm really missing in my life? What is it that's really important? What are the core values that when I'm aligned with them, my life is really rocking? And make sure that that's where you're pointing the bow of the ship and pointing in that direction, as opposed to these other measurements that we're get wrapped up into and think that, well, this is the thing that's going to really, you know, get me friends, or this is the thing that's really going to get me a lot of freedom and peace. Stuff is from the inside, is not external.
I want to ask you a question. There are so many people that decide that they want to be a leader. They want to be successful in business. And as you've mentioned, there's nothing wrong with any of that. That's very good. However, in most business schools, in most training, this approach is not taken. How would you want to implement some of the thoughts, like your Q7 process, into an educational system that brings this concept into young people that are going to be entering the business world? Or how could we bring an awareness of this even into young people in high school? What do you think can be done to implement this? Because so frequently there are paradigms by society, by families, by educational systems that have labels on them that say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Mm-hmm. You've got to be a street tiger. You've got to be out there. It's a dog-eat-dog world. You cannot have that kind of a feeling attitude. You have that, you're stupid.
Yeah. Downright un-American, you know. You can't be going after all that fuzzy stuff, money stuff. You know, you got to go after the. Yeah, but you know. And first, let me just say, so it's not so much of an abstraction. The thing that I'm looking for when I'm looking for fulfillment, and I've just seen this pattern over and over again, is a person have a sense of self-acceptance? Are they okay with themselves? Do they have connection in their life? Do they have an ability to connect vulnerably, openly, honestly with other people in order to get that back, that mutual vulnerability that comes in a connecting relationship? So what are their relationships like? And then do they have a sense of purpose? there's something that's bigger than them, something that's bigger than their checkbook. Again, nothing wrong with that, but if there's not something that's even more important, oftentimes it's not very satisfying or inspiring. And the third thing that fulfilled people have is there's this orientation to service. So your question is, hey, you know, in this culture, in this society, there's like a headwind when we try to pursue that fulfillment. We can find ourselves, I often kind of say it's counterintuitive and countercultural to focus on fulfillment. So here's my answer to that question is, and it's in a word, it's support. It's finding people and circles in your life that will support that aspiration. And there are a lot of younger people nowadays that actually come into the workforce with these things in mind, service being one of them, relationships really important. They're motivated very differently than certainly my generation. So what's happening is also in all the kind of midlifers, I'm noticing, some people are starting to wake up to the value of mastermind groups, executive peer groups, circles, and even in a graduate school, there are programs, there are classes that sell out very quickly. Stanford has one, for example, where the idea is you meet with like-minded peers, and they provide a safe environment where people can be honest with each other in a confidential setting, talking about what they really want in their life and some of these temptations, distractions, shiny objects that they're chasing that can take them off track. So I think that it's very hard to do this alone. So coaching, in my book I describe accountability partners, mentors. That's what it's going to take oftentimes to kind of stay on that path that is sometimes, you know, not the one that's the popular one.
Now, you go in to descriptions and points of detail about building a four-quadrant team. That's how you describe it. Accountability partners, people to link up with, just as you've mentioned. And one of the points that you bring up that I think is especially significant is that one also needs to be an observer. You really need to take the time to look at the individual that impresses you. And what is it about them that you want to emulate? What is it about them that you feel can make you a better person? And I think that it has been disturbing to many people when they say, I don't know, I don't see anybody in my environment that I can admire. I don't know. I don't see it in my family. I don't see it in my working environment. They're sort of lost. What would you say to someone, Brian, that would make that remark to you? What would you recommend to them as a means to be able to recognize those individuals, whether they're living or dead, that could be good mentors for them?
Yeah, that's a good, you know, good question. I have, at first I think it's, you need to kind of have an intention about what it is that you're looking for, and I think that this can't be just I'm looking for somebody to kind of teach me a few things. I think that four quadrant approach that I described is that we all have room to optimize. We all have room to kind of add to our skill sets, and so what we'll find rather easily in the world are doers. There's a lot of doers out there, and particularly in the business world, people that work hard and get things done. There's a lot of reward for that. And there's a lot of thinkers out there. So that's the second quadrant, doing and thinking. And, you know, these are people that are intellectually curious but analytical, good judgment, that kind of thing. high IQ. Again, I can find people that are thinkers and doers pretty quickly. What I'm oftentimes struck by is people to round out their kind of four-dimensional self, if you will, is to find people that have high emotional quotients. So they're emotionally literate, expressive, are in connection with their own emotions. They use that as a way to connect with other people. So that feeling quadrant, the third quadrant, I'm oftentimes looking for people that have a good capability in that area. So if I have an intention to find somebody with that skill set, that'll help me find those people, because I gotta know what I'm looking for. And then the last piece is this, I call it, in as the fourth quadrant, is the being quadrant, the person that has a certain presence about them, a certain way of being, that they're not doing anything to impress you. They're not telling you anything, you know, clever. There's something just about the way they are, what their state of being is, their attitude, their kind of view of the world. And I look at those people as, again, harder to find. They're people that have usually some connection with a spiritual life, not necessarily a religious person, but a sense of a purpose in their life. They're grateful people. And so your question is, like, so where do I find, if I'm looking for, to fill in those extra quadrants, I'm looking for a four-quadrant person, if you will, where am I going to find those people? I have found that joining certain organizations can help. In the business world, I've noticed that people will join, high achievers anyway, I notice, will join organizations like Vistage or Young Presidents Organization or some place where there are peers that want to connect, not just to learn more, but to support each other. And when you mm-hmm. are in an organization like that, you're bound to find people that are a little, you know, willing to have a little deeper relationship, and they're modeling some of this kind of full, kind of whole leader energy that we're looking for. I would look for the topics that I'm interested in, and who's going to listen to those talks, who's going to those type of events that are a little more reflective. That's where you'll find people that have this kind of humbleness to their leadership style, grounded, that they're really watching to reduce the collateral damage of a high pressure, you know, lifestyle, or a kind of a, you know, again, a professional career path. They're out there. You just have to be intentional about it and have a real plan to say, look, I want to find those types of leaders.
Well, Brian, you've given us some very good tips. The Business of Wanting More, and I think it is a powerful book because it enables people to really see, one, your story, and to be able to read through, to understand that fulfillment is something that is going to come from within yourself more than from the things. Things are wonderful. I enjoy money. I think money is great. There are those points, though, of recognition within ourselves that we have to be true to, and I think that is really some pretty powerful wisdom. And in your book, though there's a subtitle, Why Some Executives Move from Success to Fulfillment and Others Don't, I think anyone that's listening, even though the term executive is used, if you apply that term to your own life, whoever is listening, you're the CEO of your own life. So when you apply that term to yourself, that empowers you, and it empowers you to be aware of the fact that you can have the fulfillment, the success that you want. They can be partners. They don't have to be self-destructive. They don't have to be negative. Brian Gast has been my guest. Brian, what is your website that people can go to find out more?
Yeah, the best one is www.briangast.com, so B-R-I-A-N-G-A-S-T.com, and you'll see, you know, descriptions of the various leadership programs that I run and a little bit more about the book. And you can
Brian
buy the
Gast,
book there, too.
It well. Has been a delight having you as a guest today. The business of wanting more. We're all in the business of life. Wanting more, that's a part of it. But you want quality, maybe right along with the quantity. This is Donna Sebo. I recommend the book highly. Brian Gast, again, thank you for being my guest. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic. Safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to let those of you know that are in the Southern California area, I am going to be down in the Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Glendale, Burbank area from February the 4th through February the 9th. I will be available for private appointments. The Donna Sebo Show is still going to be broadcast live every morning, and you will have a chance perhaps to hear some stories of some of my adventures when I'm traveling. But more than that, if you'd like to meet with me by phone or in person for a private consultation, you can do so by calling my office, scheduling an appointment, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Meanwhile, I want to share some wacky information with you. Taxes. Ooh, doesn't it just make you shudder every time you think of it? Well, this is a battle that will go on ad infinitum. If you study history, you're going to find that even the Mesopotamians were complaining about taxes. It's an age-old battle. Why? Because governments in and of themselves don't make income. They take income from the people that do. That is nothing new. That has been around as long as there's been any kind of a society, quote-unquote civilized society, where they wanted to have things bigger, better, greater, whatever. And those in power wanted to make sure that they had, whether any of those under them didn't have very much themselves. Well, taxes get so wild and wacky. They really, really do get wacky. And I came across this information, and I just had to laugh. It's not a laughing matter, to be perfectly frank. But sometimes we wonder why people do certain things. Well, I can recall someone telling me how at a period in European history in Holland, there were buildings. The city decided to tax you if you were going to have a certain width, I believe it was, in a building. So what people did, they would just build to the certain widths that you were allowed, and then they built up. So you had these narrow little houses that went up so many stories. Kept people more physically fit because they had to go up and down the stairs all the time. But all kinds of strange things have been done throughout history. Well, we still have, as I said, more of it going on. This one is about bagels. Now, I know this sounds really weird, but you need to know this, because if ever you're in New York, which I recommend everybody visiting, New York to me is just full of its own special magic. Bagels. If a bagel is sliced or prepared in some way, you will be taxed. If it's not, you won't be taxed. Now, there's even more to this poor bagel. If you eat the bagel in the store, it's taxed no matter what. Feeling a little confused? Well, don't feel badly. So when you're in New York, if you don't want to pay the tax, get it to go. And carry your own knife so you can cut it. Anyway, and then in Kansas. Okay, there's a law in Kansas that says romantic rides in air balloons or any kind of a romantic ride are considered a form of air transportation and are tax-free. All right, now this is for balloons, if you're going to go up in a balloon. However, if the balloon is tethered for riders to take in the scenery, the trip is considered a form of entertainment and is taxed. Okay, I know, it just doesn't make sense. Who makes this stuff up? My goodness. Arkansas, tattoos and piercings. And you wonder how they get it through. We never are allowed to vote on this stuff. Some ding-dong somewhere is deciding to make up these rules. Why? Because they've got to figure out something here where they can get some extra dollars in the government coffers. Here in the state of Washington, they are trying to pass a ruling that is going to charge you a tax for every mile you travel in your car. I know, violation of privacy, all kinds of stuff comes up in here, but that's what they're doing. Somebody has been sitting and thinking up this stupidity. It's unbelievable. Anyway, in Arkansas, a few heavy metal bands emerge from the natural state. 6% tax is levied on body piercings and tattoos. Why? What's the reason? Well, I don't know. Only the people that made that ruling can tell you. And in Illinois? Well, they tried this in Washington, and it didn't work very well. The Prairie State Legislature raised sales tax on candy from 1% to 6.25% in September 2009. However, if you bought Twix, Butterfinger, or Kit Kat, they're exempt. Why? They contain flour and they're considered a food, not a candy. They tried doing that here in the state of Washington, and it hit the fan big time. People were furious. And what they had was a list of candy. The poor merchants, they had a list of candy that was acceptable and that would be taxed and another list that wouldn't be taxed. Well, the voters, they got it on the ballot. It was thrown out. Absolutely thrown out. I mean, these people, you'd think they'd focus on things that were more important. So they got rid of that really fast here in the state of Washington. They tried to do some other things, but it takes action. It really, really does. And last but not least, in Alabama, anybody that plays cards, for each deck of playing cards you purchase in Alabama, you're going to be subject to a tax of 10 cents. The person who sells you the deck pays $4 annually for the license to sell the deck. Okay, that's a few little notes of trivia. It's fascinating. How many of us know what really goes on? I remember listening to a lady at one point on an interview here in the Seattle area. And she, like so many of us, she had to work every day. And so she was very unaware of politics, so to speak. And she said, when I retired, I decided that I wanted to make a commitment to going down to the state capitol, and that's here in Olympia, Washington, and observe what was going on. And to her amazement, she was stunned. She said, most of the time, the politicians weren't there. Most of the time, what you saw filmed was one lone individual inside an empty room. She said the cameras didn't show you that there wasn't anybody else seated anywhere else. And they're talking as if they're talking to a whole room of people. They're not. She said not only that, but she dedicated her time to really find out what was going on. And she said so much of it was done behind closed doors. Fascinating stuff. So her education went from being sadly lacking to being informed, and she then took it upon herself to try to inform as many other people as possible. And I think lots of times there's so much that's done in life, in business, on so many different levels, that we honestly don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And I think that we can take things a little bit further. Many times we have to look at our life, within our own life, our own space, with an integrity. And then that's going to overflow into anything and everything else that we're associated with. But it does take a willingness to look. And I think that that is extremely important. We need to be unafraid of looking. We need to be unafraid of the challenge that change perhaps will bring into our lives. And you know, it's always going to be going on this planet. I don't care who you are. I don't care what culture you come from. I don't care what is happening. You look at any particular phase in history. You'll hear me bringing up history quite a bit during the show. And the reason I do it is because the more you become aware of history, cultural history, of anybody, any grouping around the world, the more you realize how much we carry forward sometimes from the past without being really alert and aware to it, or of it, I should say, and how when you become awake, then you'll go, son of a gun, am I repeating the same patterning that went before? Why is it that I'm doing this? Is it because of society? Is it because of family? Is it because of religious beliefs? Is it because of this, that, or the other? Having integrity with yourself is a do-it-yourself job. And it's a fascinating one, really. You really should consider yourself a very interesting subject. Because every human being I have ever met to date has a complexity to them and a depth that if they're willing to explore it, may open them up to a genius within themselves that's utterly phenomenal. And that is what I think life is all about. It's a journey. Fareed Zakaria is a man that I think has a very, very good attitude about life. He said, we really need to be able to look and appreciate that we are moving forward, even though so many times we feel like we're moving backwards. And he said, in his observation, terrorism is down 50% since the early 1990s. And we have a lot that really is working in this world. And he said, even though there is this slow growth cycle that we're looking at, you hear about this on the, through the media all the time. But what is not being paid attention to is that though there may be seemingly slow growth in certain areas of industries, there are other industries that are coming in with very rapid growth. And that's an indicator of a shift. It's an indicator of the technological tsunamis, small, medium, and large, that are occurring. And in the last 50 years, when you look at history, the United Nations even says that poverty has been reduced on phenomenal levels in the last 50 years. Has it been eradicated? No. I don't know that it ever will be eradicated. But in the recent years, the last 20 years especially, life expectancy has gone up, and many of the children born today are going to live to be well over 100 years of age. Look at the technology that has been developed just recently. A third industrial revolution? It's happening. All of that and more. Look at the shifts and changes. They're happening. And they're happening with a speed that's unparalleled in our known history. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break for just a minute. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you. We offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Toll-free telephone number if you'd like to call in and chat is 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share with you some of the guests that are going to be coming on the show next week. We've got a healer, Dr. Shaw, that is going to be on the air with us. If energy healing has been of interest to you, this gentleman has put together a book, Divine Healing Hands, and I'll be talking with him on Monday. And then Whisper of the Serpent. That's a provocative title, isn't it? James Henderson is going to be my guest, and we're going to be discussing the medical industry. And he is going to be talking about how history has affected the results that we are seeing being demonstrated in today's world, and how we possibly can change that. But the information is intriguing. And then mentor in the world of the near-death survivor. Who would have thought that people need mentoring after this experience? Well, Carolyn Matthews does it. And then Julia Shopik, Honest Medicine. Julia has stories to share regarding the world of medicine and how she was able to enable her husband to live an additional 13, 15 years past the dictate that he was going to die within just a few months because of understanding supplementation, body chemistry, etc. So I think you're going to find these guests, and there's much, much more that's going to be coming up on the Donna Sebo Show. So I'm delighted to share the time with you, and I'm so thrilled that you're going to join me. Right now, I want to talk for just a moment about an East Coast sea serpent. Ah, yes. Don't you just love these stories? I do. I think it's so much fun to find out about experiences that people had, and many times the words that they choose to utilize may not be the words that we would choose to utilize in today's communication. But you have to sort of go back into their time frame to understand they're using the language of description that they could best utilize at the time. Now, we're traveling back to the 1800s, a specific date, in fact, August the 14th of 1817, in Gloucester Harbor, Massachusetts. There was an 80-foot sea serpent that charged towards a ship that Matthew Gaffney, who was the ship's carpenter, and he's seeing this 80-foot animal swimming, undulating towards the ship. And he's firing his gun. He said the beast appeared late in the afternoon. It had a dark-colored head, a white underside, and was the size of a 4-gallon drum. Now, when it was fired upon, this sea serpent sank from sight, and it appeared 100 yards away and traveling half a mile per minute. There was a judge, a physician, and a naturalist that got as many testimonials as they possibly could from eyewitnesses, because this animal, and I say animal, was seen over the next couple of weeks. More than one person saw this creature. One person said it looked like a strange marine animal having a head the size of a horse's, with features of a rattlesnake, and it seemed to move in circles or in a straight line. We move forward from 1817 to 1819. Again, on August the 14th, it's seen. They described the head as being snake-like at the end of a long neck emerging from the water, and several humps were seen along its back. 200 people had gathered to observe this unique sea serpent. When they saw it, though, scared them. And it started moving towards shore. Well, guess what they did? They took off. They weren't going to stand around and see what's happening. They saw this creature in their waters all during the warm summer months. Now, they found the earliest documented accounts of this black snake-like serpent go as far back as the 1600s. That's right. Colonists reported seeing it coiled up on a rock at Cape Ann. 1779, an American gunship, the Protector, saw it lying motionless on the water inside of their vessel. There were some men that decided they were going to try to get close to it, got a large boat. But as soon as they started to get close to it, raised its head 10 feet up into the air and swam off. And then it started to move a little bit more quickly when they started firing at it. 1780, another sighting. The beast disappeared beneath the waves. Well, it looks like Nessie had some relatives on the east coast of the U.S. and in other places as well. Those sightings keep coming up. The mysteries of the ocean deep. Do we still have creatures in the sea that are millions of years old? Absolutely. One day, I think the mystery will be solved. Donna Sebo here. I'm delighted you've been able to join me. You have an absolutely awesome weekend ahead of you. Wherever you are in this wonderful planet of ours, I wish you nothing but the best. Enjoy and appreciate all the beauty around you. More than anything else, appreciate yourself, because you're here to live your life with a purpose, to be fulfilled, to know that you are a part of this great experience of life. And I'm so glad you are. Thank you for joining me today. Talk with you on Monday. Remember always, you're the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Chat with you later. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.